for us today on the issue of cosmology and equality. Okay, so I'm going to talk about what then inequalities can teach us about the inflationary spectrum. And this is work I've done with Bruno Parentani in Oxford. Okay, so why this subject? Well, in the first place, because I think it's a question that deserves interest in its own right. But more importantly, I think that it can serve as a useful guide if one wants to make sense out of the vague assertion that there must be a quantum to classical transition of the inflationary spectrum. So before getting into the technicalities of Bell inequalities, let me just explain this first. Okay, so out of the inflationary paradigm, that is, that before the phase of radiation domination, that there has been a phase of accelerated expansion, from this postulate comes a causal mechanism to generate the primordial fluctuations. And by that I mean the metric perturbations at the beginning of the radiation-dominated era, which in turn will give density fluctuations in radiation, which will be observable as temperature fluctuations in the cosmic microwave background. And on the other hand, they will also produce matter density fluctuations, which will become clusters and galaxies by gravitational instability. Okay, so this causal mechanism is the well-understood process of pair creation of pairs of quanta from the vacuum in a strong gravitational field. And more precisely, we can show that the metric perturbations are described by a tensor product of highly squeezed two-mode states. So I'll come back to these states in a moment. I just want to say here that those are pure states and they have EPR correlations. So since there are EPR correlations, we can ask the question, can we verify that some Bell inequalities are violated by the inflationary spectra? So this is okay. And from this, you see that inflation tells us that, the most important prediction of inflation is that all the structures that we observe in the universe, temperature fluctuations and galaxies, have a quantum origin, which is due to this process. So with
what
that,
what is K? What was K there?
Ah, the scale factor.
The scale factor.
Yeah. So d squared tA means that there is a phase of accelerated expansion. So with this prediction comes a series of questions. And if we take inflation seriously, there is clearly a conceptual gap that needs to be filled. So I try to list some of these questions. I hope they are clear, but I'm looking forward to hear your comments on the formulation of these questions. So the first question is, since start from the observation that squeezed states are very fragile, in the sense that if you have a system which is in a highly squeezed state, then if you couple the system to a small noise, the squeezed state will rapidly decay into a density matrix. So you can wonder now if how rigorous is the derivation of the inflationary spectra, and how robust are the predictions concerning those fractures. The second question you can ask is, can we disentangle the classical from the quantum correlations in the state? Because you have EPR state, so you have both quantum and classical correlation. So can we disentangle them? And what I have in mind is, more precisely, what is the respective impact of classical correlations and quantum correlations, if any, on structure formations? And in particular, Some people claim that there must be some decoherence so that all the quantum correlations are erased so that structure formation happens the way we think it does. Okay, so do we really have to resort to decoherence in order to account for the observed structures in the universe? Of course, with the question of decoherence comes the question of entropy, and we would like to think this entropy as a gravitational entropy, since we are talking about the decoherence of the metric perturbations. So what is the role of this entropy, for instance, in structure formation, in the second principle of thermodynamics? And a last question I found is, what does it mean to couple a quantum degree of freedom to an effectively classical one? Okay, so maybe it's too general, so I will proceed with Bell inequalities, and I will come back to those questions at the end of the talk and comment on what Bell inequalities can teach us about those questions. Is that okay? Okay, so for Bell inequalities, you need three ingredients: the state, a set of observables, and write down the inequalities, and then verify if they are violated or not. Okay, so let's start with the state. So those three states. The observational data come from time slices in radiation or matter-dominated eras, it's convenient, and that's what I will do, to decompose the initial vacuum into the fourth basis defined in the radiation-dominated era that have a particular well-defined particle content. So this is the out basis. And to do that, I've made first a pre-decomposition, where the vacuum defined at the beginning of the inflationary era is decomposed into a tensor product of two mode states, where the two modes have opposite wave vectors. Therefore, I have introduced just this tilde tensor product, which goes over only half of the possible values of the case, because I don't want to count twice each one. Okay, so now let's concentrate on one of these two modes. So the odd particle content of a given two mode is obtained by the action of a Gaussian operator on the vacuum of the modes k and minus k. And this Gaussian operator is parameterized by a complex parameter, so you have two independent field parameters, and you can immediately see that the action of this operator is to create pairs of quanta of opposite momentum. And you can expand this exponential and write in the fourth the state in the fourth basis, and you see that all the states are populated with perfect correlations in the occupation number, which are the EVR correlations that I was talking about.
What was that k?
Sorry?
What was that k with sub k?
The k is a parameter, a complex parameter, which contains the whole, the effect of the whole dynamic of the inflationary variable. Now you can read practically the properties of the inflationary spectrum on these two equations. The inflationary spectra are described by pure states, which come from the fact that you start with a vacuum, which is a pure state, and you have a unitary evolution. This state is homogeneous because you start from the vacuum, and the action for the dynamics is invariant by translation. same for isotropy. And the state is Gaussian because you start from a Gaussian state, the vacuum, and you have a unitary evolution under a quadratic Hamiltonian. Now, where does that quadratic Hamiltonian come from? Simply, you expand the matter and gravity action around the background solution up to second order because you work at first, you restrict yourself at first order of perturbation theory because the fluctuations are very small. So we expect that it's a very good approximation, and it is indeed. So since you work at first order, you neglect nonlinearities, you have a quadratic Hamiltonian that acts on a Gaussian state, so you end up with a Gaussian state. And finally, you have EPR correlations.
And what do you mean by that?
By what?
By EPR correlations.
One possible definition could be that they will violate, the state will violate some bad inequalities. Another answer would be if you take the limit of the mean occupation number of this state, which goes to infinity, then you will see that this state becomes the EPR state in the paper of Einstein, Podolsky, Rosa. That is the there are regularized versions of the EPR state in that paper.
Okay.
Fine, but I will not consider only this pure two-matrix state. I will work with the entire class of isotropic homogeneous Gaussian state. Two-mode Gaussian state. So why would I want to do that? I will assume for the rest of the talk that I do measurements on one two-mode sector only. So now remember I said that you end up with a pure Gaussian state and homogeneous state because you start from the vacuum and you have a unitary evolution under a quadratic Hamiltonian. So now, let's assume that we take into account the non-linearities that come from the matter and gravitational actions. What happens? Well, it's simple. You still start from the vacuum, and you still have a unitary evolution. So you end up with a pure state. Fine. You still start from the vacuum, and homogeneity and isotropy are preserved because the nonlinear term in the action are preserved invariant by translation and rotation. Okay, but now since you take into account nonlinearities, you end up with a non-Gaussian state. Okay, but what I will do now is that. Is an R3 approximation, which is allowed by the fact that those non-linearities are very weak. And so that, to put it in other words, I will make a Gaussian approximation of this state. So just to outline the procedure, in this new non-Gaussian pure state, the expectation value of the metric perturbation is still zero because homogeneous. And in the R3 approximation, the green functions with an odd number of fields will be zero, and the green function with an even number of fields will be calculated by simply neglecting the connected parts. So I simply do a Gaussian on that. Okay, so now those two-mode homogeneous Gaussian distributions are characterized by three parameters. And to see that, simple, you just notice that statistical homogeneity is equivalent to saying that the two-point function calculated in those states depend on the difference of the space arguments only. And you can see very easily that this means that the only non-vanishing expectation values the 2-point explicit value are those two, and they are notion conjugate. One gives you the mean occupation number in those states, and homogeneity comes from that delta k minus 10, which is just the mean occupation number for each mode in this state. And the second is the correlation between a mode k and a mode minus k, which is enforced by the delta. This delta also is the expression of the homogeneity of the state. And this expectation value I wrote it as a complex number ck. Okay, remember in the pure case, for the Swiss state, I had only two parameters, which was this complex number delta. And you can check that nk and ck are given by zk in the pure case. And I will work at fixed mean occupation number, because basically what the occupation number do is to change the power spectrum, the power of the distribution. So I will work at fixed power. And I will work at a fixed phase for the complex number C, because changing the phase of C does not change the entropy. So there will be no difference, nothing. So I'm not considering those changes here. So the class of states I'm considering are parameterized by the ratio of the norm of C over the mean occupation number. And more precisely, I've introduced just this parameter delta k with this complex expression with the n, but it's not important. And this parameter delta is just the level of coherence of the distribution. So I have this class of homogeneous Gaussian distributions, which are parameterized by one real number, which is the level of coherence of the distribution. And in the case of delta equals zero, this corresponds to the pure state, the highly Swiss state. And in the case of delta equals n, then the norm of C is zero. So it means that the modes k and minus k are not correlated. And this corresponds to a thermal state or a chaotic distribution. So I have this whole class where the pure state is one extremity and the thermal bath is another extremity, and I consider the whole class of the homogeneous state. Okay. Okay, so now for the operators. For the operators I will demand that those operators are meaningful to a cosmologist. And by that I mean that hopefully the corresponding measurements could be done in practice. So maybe what do I mean by something that is not meaningful for a cosmologist? Well, I have this example, which is the parity operator. You can check that parity operator and displacements of the parity operator lead to violation of Bell inequalities in Gaussian states. But I do not want to do that, because the states I consider have an enormous mean occupation number. You can roughly estimate that these occupation numbers are of the order of 10 to the 100, by simply saying that you have to amplify the vacuum fluctuation to the observed amplitudes in the CMB or something. So you need a tremendous occupation number, a lot of excitation to reach the observable semi-classical amplitudes. So that's what I mean by not meaningful. So You could say well, since I'm measuring, I'm doing a measurement on a a field in a semi-classical configuration, I could use the field amplitude operator and its conjugate momentum. Okay, so this is not possible for Gaussian state because Bell has shown that since the Wigner function of Gaussian states is positive everywhere, it can be used to construct explicitly a local hidden variable description of the correlations. So unfortunately, you cannot use phi and phi dot. Okay, so without further ado, I will use as a projector, the projection operator, as an operator, the projection operator on two coherent states, a coherent state D for the mode K and a coherent state W for the mode minus K. This was a proposition in a different context by a Polish guy. I cannot say his name, I'm afraid. Okay, so I will use those operators. And so what do I mean by meaningful then? Well, in the high occupation number limit, which is what I'm considering here, the expectation value of those operators in the two-mode Gaussian distribution I'm considering is just the probability to measure a semi-classical configuration of the field in the coherent state V and W. And I've written this this joint probability here in a non-symmetric form, where actually it turns out that this conditional probability factorizes as the marginal probability to measure the mode K in the coherent state V times the conditional probability to measure the mode minus K in the coherent state W, given that the mode K is measured in the coherent state V. So you see that the marginal probability is of course Gaussian, which is parameterized only by the power spectrum. And on the other hand, the conditional probability is centered around some value, which is determined by the value of V and the parameters of the distribution. And you also see that the second big difference is the width of the distribution, which is very different from the one of the marginal probability, where we see this parameter delta again, which was the level of coherence. So basically, this is the norm of C over n minus 1. So in the case of the pure state, the two-mode free state, this parameter is 0, and you just have this simple exponential. And in the case of a thermal bath, your delta equal n, so you have the same width here, and you can check that W goes to 0, which means that in that case, the mode minus k is statistically independent of the mode minus k, which corresponds to a thermal bath. Okay, and you have this now this clear picture that, well, you could have expected it, that the level of coherence is just a measure of the strength of the correlations between the modes k and minus k, the two integral modes. Okay. And lastly, about those projectors, you can also check that the corresponding measurements, so measuring mod k in the coherent state V and measuring the mod minus k in the coherent state W, correspond to do at a given time, on a given time slice, for instance, on the last coherent surface, correspond to do measurements at space-like separated intervals, which is a necessary condition to to have bad inequalities. So I'm sorry, I don't have time, I think, to explain this, but what it says is that on a given time slice, when you measure mode k in occurred in state V, you have kind of local bump, fluctuation of energy, if you want. Then you can check that there is a perfectly correlated fluctuation of energy at a given point on the last capturing surface, and those are separated by a distance which corresponds to the distance on the last capturing surface. Well, those two points where you measure the two correlated fluctuations are the intersection of the last scattering surface with the future light cone, which starts at the end of the rotation, at the beginning of the rotation of the material. Okay, so the important point is that where the measurement, where you measure the fluctuations, these points are actually causally disconnected.
How far apart are those in the real sky?
Okay, it depends at what time you look at the sky. To answer your question, another manifestation of those EPR correlations are the super horizon correlations we observe in the CMB. So the answer to your question is that at the time of last scattering, the separation is one hover radius at the time of last scattering, and today it corresponds to the angular opening of 1 degree, roughly speaking, something like that. So yes, another manifestation of this EPR correlation is that you observe an entire correlation peak in the crossbar spectrum of temperature polarization, and this entire correlation peak is at a scale which was super horizon at the time where those correlations were formed, which means that this is an unambiguous signature of the presence of super horizon correlations at the time of last scattering, which is a prediction of inflation. And which is this prediction comes from the EPR correlation in the state.
Well, what's the observational status of that?
Of what?
Of the extra boundary cross correlation.
What do you mean by the observational status?
Has it been measured?
Yes.
And to what position?
No.
How sure are we that this is?
All the results obtained with 2 sigma or 3 sigma at best. So, but we are pretty confident. I would say. Okay, for particle physicists, it's ridiculous, but but we can be pretty confident because there is yes. So it's only 2 sigma, but
pretty confident of what?
That we actually that the entire correlations are here. So this is a result given with 2 sigma precision, between 2 and 3 sigma. So we have not strong confidence in this result, but we are pretty confident. But this is the case for all cosmology. We cannot be certain. Okay. So now with the inequalities. And to write down the inequalities, I will consider a subclass of those Gaussian states which have only classical correlations. So these are called separable states. And they are defined like this. They are just, you can write them as a statistical mixture of coherent states. So here pi is the projection operator on the coherent state alpha for the mode k and the coherent state beta for the mode minus k. And I sum over all the coherent states, and p of alpha, beta, and parameterized by delta, the level of coherence, is just a Gaussian function. And you can show that those this expression exists, those states are defined if and only if the level of coherence is bigger than 1. I work in the high occupation under the limits. Okay, and why are they classically correlated? Well, simply because you can compare them with a classical protocol, which is that you have four random numbers, alpha and beta, which are complex, so four real numbers, and they are characterized by a probability distribution function, which is p. And each time you have you get a value of alpha and beta, there is a physicist that prepares a mode k in the coherent state alpha, and a physicist, far alpha, that prepares the mode minus k in the coherent state beta. So since those states are classically correlated, I will never violate any bad inequalities of any kind. So I will use them to derive the bad inequalities. And on the other hand, if I have a state with a level of coherence smaller than 1, I will check whether or not Bell's inequalities are violated. Okay, so those two-mode classical states allow for the local hidden variable description of the correlations. And to see this, you just write the joint probability to measure the mode k in the coherent state V, the mode minus k in the coherent state W, in those states. And you have this expression, which is what we mean by a local hidden variable description of the correlations. That is that your hidden variables are the four parameters alpha and beta. They are described by the probability density p of alpha and beta. And the locality is expressed in three different ways. The first is that the conditional probability p of k to measure the mode k in the coherent state v, knowing the value of the hidden variables, is independent of the result of the measurement on the mode in this case, so independent of W. Same vice versa for the mode minus k. And the third condition is that for a given value of the hidden variables, the joint probability to measure k in the coherent state B minus k in the coherent state W, knowing the values of the hidden variable, is just the product of each probability. So that's it. And now you can write down the Bell inequalities. So these actually are called closure-Hom inequalities, which are a generalization of Bell inequalities. But OK, they follow from, let me just remind you the proof. They follow from an algebraic relationship between any four real numbers between 0 and 1. So you have x prime, y prime between 0 and 1. And you can show that this quantity is always smaller than 0. So xy plus xy prime plus x prime y minus xy y prime minus x minus y is always negative for any four real numbers between 0 and 1. So now you just make the identification for any value of the hidden variables alpha and beta. You just set x equal to the probability to measure the mode k in its ground state, which is of course positive and smaller than 1, y the probability to measure minus k in the ground state. X prime, the probability to measure the mode K in occurrence in V, and Y prime, the probability to measure minus K in occurrence state W. And then you take the average over alpha and beta, and you have this relation, which is the Clausewitz inequalities I will check. So this is a function of VW and the parameter delta. And I have this ratio, the joint probability to measure k n minus k in background state plus the joint probability to measure k n v minus k in instrument state plus the joint probability to measure k in instrument state minus k in w and minus the joint probability to measure k in the current state v and minus k in the current state w. And I divide by the marginal probabilities, which in this case are constants. And this expression is smaller than 1. Okay, so now we can check. So I just look for the maximum of this function C of V and W. I find that the maximum, so there is a whole direction in the parameter space where the maximum is located. So you have just choose these configurations of the current state V and W. So where you have this phase relation between V, W and the phase, and yes, and the phase of C. And the norms of the two coherent states are equal. Okay, and you can look for the maximum. So just the picture is more telling, I think. So I've, here is just the value, the function C, in, as a function of the norm of V squared. So I just have one parameter here. And I've, one is where if Bell's inequalities are satisfied, the function should be below the line, the horizontal line 1, and if there is a variation, it's above. So I've drawn three different the value of C for three different distributions. In red, for the pure state, the squeezed state, and we see that there is a whole range of values for the coherent state. To that where these inequalities are violated. In the case where delta equals 0.5, so you already see that this is a small number because delta can derive from 0 to n, and n is very big. So just a comment, and I come back to this later. So you see that, of course, the range of values where there is a violation is much smaller, but there is still a violation, and the maximum of the violation is smaller than in the pure case, as we can expect. And for delta equals 0.1, there is no longer any violation. Okay. So now let me summarize what I've done. Okay, so first I chose to focus my attention on only one two-mode sector. This is a choice. This is the simplest correlations I can study, so I chose this one. And I made an approximation, a coarse graining, where I chose to ignore the correlations which the information about the correlations which are in the momenta of the distribution of order higher than higher or equal than 3. So I use the Gaussian as that, and so I was led to consider the class of all the homogeneous Gaussian distributions. And by working at by fixing two parameters which have no incident on the discussion here, these Gaussian distributions are parameterized by only one parameter. which is the level of coherence, or the strength of the correlations between the two node scale and the scale. Okay, and I've considered the joint probability to measure the two nodes into given semi-classical configurations defined by two coherent states. Okay, so what are the results? Well, I verified that there is a small range of values of the level of coherence for which Bell inequalities are violated. And also that for values of the parameter bigger than one, all the quantum properties of the states are erased, because when delta is bigger than one, this corresponds to those classically correlated states I've written. Okay, so despite our efforts to find observables which are meaningful to a cosmologist, that is, that we could hope that the measurements could be done in practice, it turns out that an experimental verification of those violations of the Bell inequalities are excluded, because in order to do so, we had to consider rare events which are far from the real mean square value, and we had to consider isolate configurations with a precision which was of the order of the width of the coherent state, which is 1, which is much smaller than the width of the distribution, which is given by n. So, because why is it so? Because here you see, because the maximum value of the value where the function is maximum, where the violation of the inequality is maximum, is given by this number of order 1 times 1 plus delta. So we know that delta is smaller than 1, so this is a number of order 1. Okay, and my function here is a combination of the joint probability in to measure the state in a ground state and on the maximum. So I have to isolate configurations of the field which are very, very close. And in practice, this is not possible. We cannot conceive measurements that are so precise. So first of all, they are very rare. And second, the precision is required is enormous. In other words, that means that in order to verify a violation, you have to measure the momenta, A and AK and minus K, with a precision of 1 over n. And in other words, that means that you have to measure the amplitude of the decay mode, which is of the order of 1 over n also. So what we've relearned here is that in practice, the observables accessible to human beings, with those observables, we cannot measure violation of Bell inequality. So what did we learn? Now I'm coming back to the questions I've listed at the beginning. So, I forgot to say something at the beginning, is that those questions that I've listed, many of the answers are already in the literature. But at least in my experience, there is still a lot of confusion about those questions. And whether it's related or not, maybe I found that the pieces of the puzzle are scattered all around the place in different scientific communities, in cosmology, in quantum optics, in quantum information. And if you have a quantum information background, you certainly notice that there is lots of things that are well known in quantum optics or in quantum information, but those things are not very are not part of the background in cosmology, for instance, and vice versa. So My name was to clarify it, to, yes, try to clarify those matters, and I hope that a good start was the list of questions I have written. And also, I wanted to show that by focusing on a much more simpler and technical question, which is, can we measure or can we verify the validation of Bell inequalities by the inflationary spectra? Well, by focusing on this simple question, we can have clear-cut answers to those more general questions. So I will now try to comment on these. So the first question was that started from the observation that the squeeze state, the highly squeeze state, are very fragile. The concern was, is the derivation rigorous and are the predictions robust? Now we can say yes, for the following reason. Which is that we've seen that the quantum properties, what we mean by the squeeze state is are very fragile, is you can rephrase it as the quantum properties are very fragile, which means that after a small amount of decoherence of the distribution, they completely disappear. And so, as such, they are not observable in practice because we work in the high occupation number limits. If you had very low occupation numbers, this would not be a problem. But in cosmology, we can. And, well, actually, incidentally, it was a surprise for me that the quantum properties completely disappear after the stretch rule. I expected that those quantum correlations would decay progressively as we decohere the distribution, but there will not be a threshold like that. So I was surprised, and I was also surprised by the value where for which those the value of this threshold, which is very small. But this is something that is already known in quantum optics, for instance. So that's an illustration of what I said. And then after this threshold, only the classical correlation remain, which is what we can expect and can be actually used, I think, as a definition of what the classical correlations are. So the second question was, can we disentangle the quantum and classical correlations in the distribution? Well, yes, of course we can. And for instance, one criterion you can propose is just the fragility of the robustness of the correlation you're looking at. And I asked this question because I had in mind the impact of the respective impact of the quantum the quantum correlation and the classical correlations on structure formation. Okay, so Bell inequalities didn't teach me anything about this. But now I can ask, what I've learned is that maybe before starting digging this complicated question, I can ask a much more simpler question, which is, can we actually expect a value of the level of decoherence which is bigger than 1? And in that case, that would mean decoherence has happened, and I don't have to bother. This is a question of pure academic delight, which is interesting, but there is no dramatic repercussion. So can we expect delta bigger than 1? The answer is yes. This is a bit of a hand-waving argument, but I think it gives a rough idea of what the answer is. Let's assume that the non-Gaussianities come from the following ansatz. This is just a field redefinition. Well, the non-Gaussian, so these are all RMS values. The non-Gaussian field is written as the sum of the Gaussian field, the Gaussian statistic, plus the square of this Gaussian field, And the non-Gaussian are parameterized by this function of k. Okay, so now if you put this and that, you can see that the modification of the power spectrum, the second momenta, is proportional to the square of, is given by the square of this parameter and the Gaussian power spectrum. Well, the power spectrum is 10 to the minus 10. This is the observation which tells us that. On the other hand, for fixed values of the occupation lambda and the phase of the second parameter, the modification of the power spectrum is given by delta over 10. Okay, so you have the power spectrum which is 10 to the minus 10, n which is, let's say, 10 to the 100th. So delta equals 1 means that this parameter, fng, is 10 to the minus 45. Okay, so now calculation gives the, according to calculation, we expect that fng is of order unity during inflation. Okay. So this, I agree this is not completely rigorous, but I think it gives a rough idea of what the answer is. And so my conclusions are that it seems that the threshold value delta equal 1, where all the quantum correlation are raised, is indeed reached if we make this kind of force training Gaussian approximation. And even if delta is more than 1, then it seems that nonlinear processes are not sensitive to the existence of residual quantum correlations, because why do I say that? Because as I've said, we cannot measure the quantum properties in practice. We cannot measure the quantum correlations in those highly excited states. So whether or not there are quantum correlations, it seems to me, we can discuss it, but it seems to me that they could not have any impact on structure formation. So for structure formation, decoherence is not necessary. On the other hand, if you want to talk about entropy, then you need a decoherence. And okay, it's a bit of a vast subject. Okay, I hope you don't mind if I skip the question of entropy. It's a bit long. Okay, and just the last question was. What does it mean to couple a quantum degree of freedom to an effectively classical degree of freedom? Well, I don't know, but what I do know now is that for a degree of freedom with a Gaussian statistics in the high occupation number, an effectively classical degree of freedom means that the level of coherence is below 1. So this is beginning of the answer. Thank you for attention. What is it? Okay. Hello. What is that? What the dump is? they said is that, if it's correct, but they looked at what they say is that exactly what the same as I said in practice. In practice, this is it. In practice, if you want to put it show that there are quantum correlations in the state, you have to do measurements with the precision of order 1/100. And so that's the last line of actually what they say is that it amounts to measure the amplitude of the decay mode, which is of order 1/n with respect to the amplitude of the grain mode. So that's exactly it. What they say that is in practice, we cannot have observable time measurement with enough precision to see the quantum correlations. And
I can see it.
Also, so next they say, well, we have an effective coarse grading or an effective decoherence by putting the decay mode equal to zero. And this is true. And in that case, well, you have suppressed half of the information in your distribution because you have, for each wavelength, you have the gray mode and the decay mode. So put to zero the decay mode, you just have the stochastic distribution of reduction, the sample of gray mode. And which is true. But if you do that, you cannot ask questions such as what is the entropy of the distribution, because this is not a dynamical decoherence. This is a physicist which decides back end that. In practice, you do not make any mistake using the effective distribution of Gaussian, the Gaussian distribution of gray modes. But if you want to ask more theoretical questions, say as the entropy, then you are stuck and have to use those anti questions.
Apparently, follow Sarbinsky and Kudarsky argument about how classical the criteria that should be satisfied is that the mode goes well outside the horizon. The limit distance should be satisfied. K over A is close to zero. And that's where we calculate the power spectrum. But for certain modes, for small wavelength mode, or large gates, very large gates, we cannot satisfy this bound because inflation ends at some time after they cross the horizon, they return to the horizon. So for these modes, we cannot, that argument is not satisfied. So, and these modes are going to contribute to the, they're basically affecting the small scale structures of the primordial black holes. So it might be, we might be able to find the signature of quantum things in such scales. You can see probably that there. Have you ever tried to?
No, never. I haven't tried.
Wouldn't that have been the problem that if you wanted to write the decay mode, wouldn't you have decayed as much? But on the other hand, the growing mode wouldn't have grown as much. And that's what we would have been doing. See, the attitude of this is very good. I'm not sure I can detect it through that.
Yeah, I was just, in my talk, I was talking about the mostly the large wave. Not the very, very, not the smallest possible. But
any other comment?
dangerous to you. Right. I just have to go okay.
Yes. Aaron, but one time. Like that.
Yeah, so you need to get this plus.